Good Saturday morning, and thanks for tuning in to Local Matters on KTLO. This is Heather Loftus, and we are so pleased to be back with you for the start of another year here on Local Matters. And always, you know, we've done this for the last couple years, and I am thrilled to say we have been able to achieve it again this year. We have the CEO of Baxter Regional Medical Center, Mr. Ron Peterson, in studio with us this morning. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Heather. Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me be the last to wish you Happy New Year. Time to get with it, right?
Everybody's back at work, and
we're moving forward.
We're moving forward. Everybody's back.
I do want to take a minute, though, and talk a little bit about 2018 before we go through all of this coming year, because I saw the coolest video, and I don't know if it was Facebook or Instagram or one of those social media channels, but it was the Baxter Regional Medical Center accomplishments video from 2018, produced by Baxter Regional Productions. It's very cool how it's all laid out there. But you can't help but feel so much pride in our local hospital when you see everything that you and your team have accomplished.
You know, we really had a good year in 2018, and Tobias Pugsley did a great job in putting that video together for us. And we showed it at employee forums because we wanted everybody to really realize what we are doing and how proud we are of our accomplishments in 2018.
The biggest one being, is there one that stands out to you more than any?
You know, I think the biggest one most of all is our growth. And our growth has really helped us in a lot of ways. But we were very fortunate last year to be recognized in several different ways. Also, mm-hmm. we were recognized as the top 20 rural and community hospital in America by the American Hospital Association, National Rural Health Association, and very, very proud of that. We're also recognized as one of the top 50 open heart programs in America. And if you think about that, you know, that's comparing us against Johns Hopkins, Cleveland Clinic, Mayo. That's we're in there with all of them, Vanderbilts, whoever you want to mention. So that's very impressive. And this past year, kind of one of the things that we believe is that, you know, you have to make sure that you have good people working for you to have a good organization. And we were very fortunate mm-hmm. to be named one of the top places in Arkansas for nurses to work this past year also.
That's incredible. Was that a first?
That was a first, yes.
I thought so.
Yes. And so we're very excited to hear that and get that.
And Baxter Regional has always been so unique when it comes to nurses and nursing programs. We're still holding on, but we haven't experienced that nursing shortage across the board like they have, you know, elsewhere in the United States. I mean, we still have job openings, don't get me wrong, but I mean,
we have job openings, but we are very fortunate and very blessed. I think we have a very excellent chief nursing officer, Shannon Noctegal. She does a great job for us, and we have very good nurse leaders. And that seems to show in our nursing staff. And we are trying to achieve what's called a magnet status, mm-hmm. which is a accreditation that shows an excellence in nursing. And there's only two hospitals right now in the state of Arkansas, Children's Hospital and St. Vincent's down in Little Rock, mm-hmm. that have that status. And it's kind of a process that you go through. And to make a long story short, our application has been accepted. So we're in the final steps, basically, and we feel that this next year we'll gain accreditation for that. And that will say a lot for Baxter Regional Medical
There's
Center.
There's going to be a big party if that happens,
isn't
there?
A very big party. Very big party.
Well, let's talk about some of the new things that are coming up for this year. Probably first on the calendar here within the next couple months is we're going to see the launch of the telehealth program. And telehealth has changed a little bit over the years. If you think about calling in to doctors that might be in Little Rock, is what you think of when you hear telehealth. Times have changed a little bit.
Times have changed quite a bit. And with technology changing, we have to change in the medical field. And so what we're trying to do is allow the convenience of kind of an urgent care through your phone. Through your phone, through your computer, whatever app or device you want to use, there will be an app, and that will come out in the first part of February. But there will be an app that says Baxter Regional Care. And you press that app, and within about 3 minutes, you'll have access. And then once you register, you can actually get quicker. I should clarify that. But Then once you're in, you'll have access to some local physicians and then also some national physicians that we've screened and feel that will provide good quality care. We're doing a pilot program with our employees right now, and they seem to really like it and really appreciate that convenience because, again, you don't need to leave your home, and you can basically have an urgent care visit. And the price is going to be $69. So a very reasonable price, we believe, for an urgent care visit.
And that's a flat fee.
And that's just a flat fee.
There's no billing that comes later.
No billing that comes later at all.
So, and this is akin to, I mean, basically you get to FaceTime a physician.
That
right?
is correct.
I mean, that's what it is. You're FaceTiming a physician. You get to see them. They get to see you. If you've cut something or think you might have broken something, I mean, they get to see you and say, you know, you might need follow-up care or something like that. But if you have a sick child, you know, you don't have to bundle them up and take them out in the cold and wait, you know,
exactly.
hours for an appointment. I mean, it's a real-time doctor's visit.
It's real-time. If it's 3 o'clock in the morning, guess what? You can get on, and in less than 5 minutes, you can get on with the physician. It's a real-time visit.
How many of us have, back in the day when our kids were babies, we heard a cough at 3 a.m. and, you know, we're like, I don't know what that is. And you end up in the emergency room
exactly.
for hundreds of dollars, you know, where it's, you know, it's an ear infection or a sinus cold. But this is groundbreaking. This is really exciting. I'm fired up about it. I'm talking fast. I know, but
that's
I'm fired
great.
Up about it. Well, and I mean, we look at it from a family standpoint.
Oh.
You know, so, question. So I think, you know, I want to FaceTime the physician because I think my child or my parent or whoever, you know, might have strep throat. Mm-hmm. Well, that requires a test to identify that. So how does that work?
Right. There's about 33 different diagnoses that the physician can diagnose over this. And so that's why we call it urgent care. They can't actually do a strep throat test. But a lot of us have been to the doctor, and the doctor says, well, we believe it's strep throat, and so they're going to treat you for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what they'll do as far as in the strep throat. But there's a lot of things that they can do. They'll prescribe medicine for you, you know, and they'll electronically send it to the pharmacy. Mm-hmm. So that's the only trip that you need to make is out to your pharmacy. And a lot of times just to get that reassurance from the doctor on what to do and how to take care, especially if you're a young mother and you have a baby. But, you know, even at my age, and my kids are very old, so I'm not going to call for my kids, but at my age, it's just reassuring to be able to talk to that physician and know what it is that's wrong with me and be able to take the next steps if I need to.
From a patient's perspective, you know, of course, the ability to, I mean, you're sick. You know, we always have to load up and go see somebody when we don't feel good, when all we want to do is stay in bed. So this can help the patient. It helps isolate a sickness. Maybe we're not sharing. The clinic waiting rooms are like, I want to burn my clothes when I leave there. I mean, I know they, and this that has nothing to do with the clinics. I know they try very hard, but all you do is hear people cough and sneeze and hack, and you're just like, oh, get me out of here.
That's correct. And what's so exciting about this, it's what I call urgent care. And I think that will play a very significant role here in the community. And so we're excited to roll it out. But I think you'll also start to see more and more telemedicine also. So if you're at a family practice or any physician office, I should say, you'll start to see more and more telemedicine being utilized if they can.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things you obviously have to do in person. Any type of procedure, like you mentioned, obviously has to be in person. But I think you'll see more and more of this, and that's what's so exciting about it. And we're really excited to be on the groundbreaking of it.
Absolutely. Again, local physicians are involved in this. Not all of our local GPs are different, but we do have some local physicians that are a part
local
of it.
Local physicians, local nurse practitioners, and then some on a national basis to make sure that we have 24/7 coverage. That's how we did it.
And how is the physician community responding to this initiative from the hospital?
You know, overall, I think they're very pleased and they like it. Everything is a change, and everybody needs to adjust to change. And so I think it's taking some physicians a little time to get used to, how do I make sure that I'm looking appropriately and communicating appropriately with that patient? How do I get the medical record? But we're working through all those things, and that's why we're working with our employees first to make sure we're getting all the bugs worked out before we go community-wide with it.
I know, because the physicians do lose a little control, and I'm sure they worry, obviously, liability being the number one thing. But, you know, there's some big hurdles that they have to overcome on their business side of it, too.
That's correct. Yeah.
You've been very active this past year in expanding the regional clinics, opening different clinics throughout your service area. We might, if you don't leave the Mountain Home city limits very often, you might not see it, but that has played a key factor in the growth of the hospital.
It really has. It has made a significant difference, and like you said, that has been a key factor. This year, we were fortunate enough to open a clinic up in West Plains. It's a primary care clinic. Lisa Curley is a nurse practitioner up there. It was Dr. Johnson's clinic up there. He had a thriving practice, and we still have a very busy clinic up there. Our goal is to have some specialists rotate up there this next year and expand that clinic, probably even add another nurse practitioner to it. And so we're seeing some growth from there. We're in the process. That's probably more this year. But we're in the process of building a 12,000-square-foot clinic down in Mountain View. And so that's real exciting to see that complex go up. It's the walls are up, the roof is on, and so we're expecting hopefully by about April that that'll open up. Dr. Spann is currently down there practicing as a family practice doctor, and Charles Grinder, a nurse practitioner, he's there. And they're also going to have physical therapy, lab, x-ray, and a little bit of a track. Dr. Spann likes to also do a little sports medicine, mm-hmm. and needs a place for people to run. So there's going to be a small track. You'd have to do an awful lot of laps to get a mile in, but there's going to be an area for you to do a little sprinting and a little running. So we're real excited about that. And then, obviously, we have clinics in Salem, in Flippin, in Yellville. Drawing a blank, where else? But Calico Rock, mm-hmm. Ash Flat, and Melbourne. Mm-hmm. About a year and a half ago, we built about a 12,000-square-foot complex in Melbourne, and we work with Dr. Gray there, and that relationship seems to be going very well. But again, we have a CAT scanner down there. We have lab, x-ray, and then there's about three nurse practitioners there and Dr. Gray in that building. And so all those clinics provide access to people at a closer radius, close to home for them, so that they can get to know their provider. And then if they need some type of service that's not provided in that community, we hope that they come this direction. And that has helped us, like you said, in our growth.
Mm-hmm. I guess about 10 years ago, the decision was made by the leadership team at the hospital to really get aggressive and start expanding in this area.
Yes.
Looking back now, knowing how you probably were, you know, some sleepless nights, you know, do we do this? Is this the right decision to do? And to see what it has meant to the patient population and the growth of the hospital. Well, do you exhale a little bit?
you do, but the minute you exhale,
something else comes up.
But, you know, as you look at strategies, you really start to wonder. But what we saw was that those people in those communities had to drive to larger cities like Mountain Home to really get access to physicians for primary care. And we felt that that service could be done in those communities. Okay. And so we wanted to make it closer and more convenient for mm-hmm. the patient. And then we also noticed that the number of admissions per 1,000 population is decreasing. Mm-hmm. And the area here, at least in Baxter County, is population is not growing. Mm-hmm. And so if you have a no-growth population and the number of admissions per 1,000 decreasing, you have to get aggressive and expand your market if you want to grow and survive as a hospital. And so we're very fortunate at this moment that strategy is working. What we feel really good about is that we continue to focus on making sure that we're providing high-quality care and making sure that people want to utilize our service, and that seems to help with our growth strategy also.
Let's take a break. You're listening to Local Matters on KTLO. Welcome back to Local Matters on KTLO. We're visiting with Ron Peterson, CEO of Baxter Regional Medical Center. Ron, you've been coming in here the 1st of January for the past few years now, and I honestly think this is the first time we have not started a show with the state of health insurance.
And it's all, I think you're right. I know you're saying that.
And it's always been, well, we don't know what's going to happen, but here's what we think. And I mean, you could, because I went back and I looked at some of our notes and I was like, my gosh, we spent years saying, we don't know. And it is what it is at this point. That's kind of the new motto when it comes to insurance, right?
It is what it is. I can still say we don't know what's going to happen, but it is what it is. And I think that's a really good point, because a lot of people looked at the ruling for the Affordable Care Act in Texas and said, oh, it's gone. And,
nothing changed.
And it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And that will take a couple of years to work through the court system, and then potentially some change could happen, but for the next few years, we do know what's there, and that is the Affordable Care Act.
Do you see a larger patient population who has insurance than had, say, 5 years ago?
Oh, there's no question. Definitely. And that has definitely helped with our bad debt at the hospital, but definitely more patients have insurance now, and I think that they feel like they have better access to care because of that.
We still run at a supremely high rate of Medicare patients in this area. And we were talking in the break, and I said, yeah, it's still around 64-65%. And you said, oh, no, we're at 70 now. And I was like, that is such an incredible amount of incredible percentage to work with.
That is. We do run about 70% Medicare and about 15% Medicaid. So we're about 85% government funded. So that's why the way the government goes is the way we go, or we look very closely at that. Mm-hmm. What some people don't realize is that Medicare and Medicaid are your two lowest payers. Mm-hmm. And most hospitals on a national basis are probably 40% Medicare and probably about that 15% for Medicaid, but give or take 55% instead of 85% Medicare and Medicaid. And so we definitely have a significant challenge because of that. But that, I think, also reflects our population, and that's the people that we do want to serve and want to help, mm-hmm. and that's why we want to be here.
And that's why, too, Baxter Regional joined with three other hospitals. You're part of a lawsuit going, you know, trying to get Medicare reimbursement at a quicker turn because of the backlog in payment there.
That is correct. We joined three other hospitals. It's been about a four-year battle right now, But we seem to be making progress on it, and the courts have actually made a judgment in our favor, but it's gone through a couple of appeals to kind of make a long story short, but we believe we're in one of the last steps of it. So,
and the hospital had to do so many things behind the scenes to help ensure their reimbursement rate from, you know, Medicare or Medicaid. I mean, when you're looking at 85%, you know, of government funding, the Electronic Medical Records Initiative and all the different codings. I mean, there's so many things behind the scenes that have gone into you trying to become as efficient as possible so that you can maximize those returns.
You know, that is correct. And people do not really understand. And hopefully that's our goal, is to keep those things behind the scene. But just to be admitted to a hospital, you know, it takes a physician, obviously, to say this patient needs to be admitted to the hospital. But just because that happens doesn't mean that Medicare will accept that patient as being, quote unquote, admitted. So we then have a nurse who's been professionally trained in reviewing the admission criteria, review it. We then put that information into a software program that we probably spend about $100,000 a year on that software program to review it. Then we send the chart out externally to have another physician review it. And we do all that before we technically can admit that patient. And we spend $500-$600 easily on every patient that's admitted just to make sure that they, quote unquote, meet admission criteria. And then that lawsuit that you were just talking about, that is because then the government, after the patient gets admitted, then the government says, oh, no, they really didn't meet admission criteria, even though we went through all that process, and then they take our money.
Right.
Yeah. So it is challenging. There's all kinds of issues with payment now. One of them is just actually, like I was just describing, actually getting paid. The other is the level of payment. Arkansas is one of the lowest states in the United States in regards to reimbursement from Medicare. So we are technically the government's best deal. The way I kind of think of it is if you're retired and you lived in Illinois and then you moved to Arkansas and you got a different Social Security check and it was less, you probably wouldn't be real happy about it. And that's kind of how it works for hospitals. Hospitals in Illinois, if they do a total hip, they get paid probably 20 to 30% more than what we get paid.
Is that because of the economics of the state? I mean, they just have more people that pay in, so therefore they get more of a return?
That's a really good question. It has to do with the formula that they put together for the payment. And basically, they it was set up about 20 or 30 years. Actually, I take that back. I've been in healthcare 30 years, and it was set up then. So it's 30 or 40 years ago that it was set up. And it was based really on what they considered inflationary factors or the cost of living. And what they were saying was New York costs more to live in New York mm-hmm. than it does in Arkansas. California costs more. Illinois costs more. And so they're going to give those hospitals more money per se. And then over the last 40 years, it's just it's gotten significantly different. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to change that, though, legislatively, because our legislators are going to get basically saying, wait a minute, you got to take money from New York or California or Florida or Illinois. And
they tend to have a little more power in the room.
They do.
Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say. That is very fair to say.
Governor Hutchinson launched his Arkansas Works program last year. At the end of 2018, we saw numbers coming out of those Arkansans that had been dropped from Medicaid, Arkansas Works and Medicaid. It was somewhere around 17,000, I believe, total Arkansans for the year out of 250,000 Arkansans, give or take a few, I think, that qualify for that standard. Is it still too early to tell what kind of effects that might have on Baxter Regional?
It is. It's a little early. Conceptually, I agree with the concept, like the idea. I believe that people should be able to try to be employed, and if they're not, volunteering, I think, is a great idea. And there's just, I think, some technicalities as far as how easy is it to get to a computer. You know, now they've allowed people to phone in, which is better, mm-hmm. I believe, to be able to do both. And we'll just have to mm-hmm. wait and watch and see. Right now, we have not felt the effects. Our thought is that we'll see an increase in bad debt because of that, but mm-hmm. We haven't seen anything yet.
I want to switch gears and ask you about the opioid problem in this area. It has really taken a stronghold over it the last couple of years. I know that Baxter Regional and physicians have worked extremely hard to look at their policies and see how they can make a bigger impact in our communities. What discussions are being had at Baxter Regional?
You know, that's a good point. And according to the CDC, we are one of the top counties for opioid use or problems in the nation. And so that is something that we have to take a close look at. And Baxter Regional has really worked on changing protocols and policies mm-hmm. and procedures. We've had educational sessions for our medical staff. Our emergency department has changed its practices significantly. Mm-hmm. We have a strong belief that one physician should be the individual, or just one physician should be the person prescribing for a patient, so that a patient shouldn't be going to two or three different physicians to receive their opioids. That should all be funneled into mm-hmm. one physician. So if you go to the emergency department and want a refill on your prescription, mm-hmm. you're not going to get it because that's not what the emergency department is for. And again, that philosophy of one physician maintaining that breaks that philosophy. And so we don't refill prescriptions there.
What if you're a cancer patient and while you're going through treatment, you ask for something for the pain? Is your oncologist able to prescribe that, or do you have to go somewhere else?
Your oncologist is able to prescribe that, and cancer patients definitely, typically, an oncologist will be the one who prescribes that, and okay. definitely there's different doses for mm-hmm. cancer patients than non-cancer patients. And so you'd be able to get the pain medicine that you need, I believe, if you are a cancer patient, from your oncologist.
Okay.
Yeah.
If people are, if they have questions about these new policies and they're confused by who they can go to and what they need to do, those, you know, because we all hear the stories of the people saying, well, I need this. This is, I have, you know, I have this pain. I'm post-surgery and I can't get this. Or, you know, where do they start? Do they go to their primary care physician?
You know, I think talking to your primary care physician is the best way. And I think what people have to realize is physicians are looking for alternatives to control your pain, but not use or prescribe opioids. And there are other alternatives out there. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we have a pain clinic. We have physicians who specialize in chronic pain to help people with that. But probably Dr. Tilley, and he actually sits on a task force here in the state and does a great job with the opioids and with pain. But probably the best thing to do is to sit down with your primary care doctor and have an open mind and say, look, I've been on these pills for 10 years, or I've been on them for 2 years, or I have this pain, what would you recommend? Would you recommend I go to a pain clinic? Would you recommend, you know, can you help me? Or if it's cancer related, where do I go? But I think sitting down and having that conversation with your primary care doctor would be the best.
I don't even know how long ago, maybe 2 years or several months ago, that all kind of runs together. There was a number that came out that people started talking about. It started on social media, but 40% of the babies that were born at Baxter Regional Medical Center during 1 month's time were addicted to some sort of drug. Now, this was not a year-long study conducted by the hospital or, you know, anything like that. This was just a, people said, you know, we're seeing more and more of this. Let's track it. And am I right? It was a four-week study, and they looked at it for 1 month.
That is correct.
And the number came out that 40% of the babies that were born 40%. Addicted. Was that a turning point for the hospital when you stepped back and said, something has got to be done?
You know, it really was. And again, that's not just opioids. But that helped us realize what I think we were feeling. We're feeling, you know, the OB unit is not always just the joyful, happy place. It's unfortunately is now our security is called to the OB unit as often as they are to the behavioral health unit, or probably more. And unfortunately, it's because of just what we're talking about, the addiction to drugs. And we have an issue here in this community, and we have to try to face it, and we have to try to address it as best we can. And I think you're right, Heather, that study, just being a month long, may not, you know, stand up to every researcher that's out there, but it told us that we needed to do something. So we started actually applying for grants, and we were fortunate enough to receive a $200,000 planning grant, and we're working with three other hospitals and with the college here in town to try to see what approaches we can do and take to help with the opioid issue.
Because there's so many factors that are tied into the addiction rate in this area. You know, when we talk about slow growth or no growth, open jobs but not a workforce to fill them, declining enrollment numbers in our public schools in the area. There's so many different things that are going on that, you know, you kind of look at from afar and say, well, there's no real common thread. And some might argue there is a common thread, and that thread is addiction.
That is correct. Some may argue that, and I would be one who argues that.
And I would back you up.
and as you look, even, you know, you don't even think about this, but I was talking with Dr. Jake Long the other day with our school superintendent, and he was talking about the number of kindergartners that have special needs now and need one-on-one training or education. And we're putting that together with what we're seeing in the hospital as far as the drug addiction rate, and kind of looking at when the issue started coming, and it's like, oh, those kids are now starting to go to school, and they have higher needs, and that affects it, jobs. I mean, it just affects the whole economy here.
Is there a takeaway that we can I don't want to end with all of us just kind of, now what? I mean, there's got to be something that we as a community, those of us that love this area more than anything and want to see us thrive and prosper, you know, what do we do? How do we work to start tearing away at
right.
some of this.
And I think that's it. You just have to take it one bite at a time, and you have to get together. You have to, first of all, say, oh, there is a problem here. Mm-hmm. I was probably one of the worst who kind of tucked it under and said, no, there's not a problem here, but there is. And so, you know, what are the ways that we can address it? What are the things we can do? And how can we work together to do that? And there are several things that you can do to help reduce that. And I think through this planning grant, I think some of the things that the chamber is doing, we're starting to get teams working together, and I think we're really starting to take some positive steps.
Sheriff John Montgomery would tell you that you could lock your doors. You can lock your car doors and lock your doors to your house, and that can be a one step that we can all do, and
exactly.
You never know where things start. Let's take a break. You're listening to Local Matters on KTLO. Welcome back to Local Matters on KTLO. We're visiting once again with Mr. Ron Peterson, Chief Executive Officer of Baxter Regional Medical Center. Had a big year last year. Looking forward to a lot of new things coming this year. One thing that was really neat about 2018 was the number of physicians that were added to our community.
We were very fortunate. We added 8 physicians. We had 2 general surgeons, an additional neurosurgeon added, a couple family practice doctors, a pediatrician, which we needed very badly, and a urologist and a hospitalist. And so a nice variety. That brings us up to about 106 physicians.
That's incredible.
It's incredible. And believe it or not, we have 72 nurse practitioners now.
Wow. Yes. I had no idea that number had grown so much.
Yes.
Kudos to all those nurses who went back to school to get that advanced degree, too.
No question. That is great.
Areas that we're still looking at to where we need more more physicians to fill that area or a line of service that we don't have available yet?
You know, a lot of people don't realize this, but there's still a physician shortage out there, so mm-hmm. it's still difficult to recruit physicians. But next year we have 4 or 5 that we feel very confident are coming. We have an ER doctor. We have an OB doctor. We have a couple mm-hmm. family practice doctors, we believe, and we have a couple we have an oncologist. Mm-hmm. They are a couple, but they're an oncologist and a psychiatrist. And they'll be coming to town. So we're very excited about that, mm-hmm. especially having that lineup already. But there's still obviously more needs to fill.
Is it hard to recruit to this area?
It's interesting because the majority of physicians like to work in larger cities. Mm-hmm. So that means that we're working with a smaller part. Mm-hmm. Once people get here, they see what's here, they see the community. You can grab them pretty mm-hmm. easily then, but it's difficult to get them to come here, and they have to want to live in a smaller community. Mm-hmm. There's no question with that. So it is a challenge, but if you find that right person, it's easy because it's such a beautiful area. We are looking. I do get asked almost daily about neurology. We do have neurosurgery, which we did not have before. Mm-hmm. We still do not have a neurologist. They're just difficult to find anywhere, mm-hmm. but we are looking. We're looking for additional GI doctors, for cardiology, family practice, and hospitalist. Those are kind of the key ones that we're working on.
Big plans for the coming year.
Big plans. Big plans. We want to continue to grow.
You got the telehealth launch coming up the next couple months. Anything else on the horizon we can look forward to?
You know, a lot of people won't realize this, but we have a new cath lab that just opened. It was a replacement, but a new cath lab. We have we're putting in what's called a hybrid room, and it's basically a cath lab and an OR room all in one. And a lot of procedures now can be done endovascularly, and so to be able to do that, but then if there's a need to open that patient up, you don't want to have to transport them to a different room, and so to have a hybrid room, that's real exciting, and that should be up by about March of this year, and so we're excited about that.
I got the opportunity to sit in the new lobby a couple of weeks ago. They were still working on it at the time, but it was fancy.
Well,
looking nice.
Well, thank you. We're very excited. We're trying to bring the colors of the Ozarks into the hospital mm-hmm. and trying to make it a natural look. And so we did a remodel of what I'll call our admissions area. And then this summer, you should see a remodel of our main entrance. And then the following summer, a continuation of the ER entrance. So all 3 will kind of blend together when we're finally done. So we're very excited about that.
The Baxter Regional Hospital Foundation had another stellar year. Barney Larry and his staff kind of knocked it out of the park, which I don't want us to take for granted that, because they do it every year. But, I mean, it's amazing the support that this community shows for this hospital year in and year out.
We are so blessed and so fortunate to have the support of the community, and there's no way we could provide the services that we provide without that. Barney and his staff do such a great job. They raise about $2 million a year on average, and that just helps the hospital so much. I've heard several times people comment about, well, the hospital, you know, makes so much money or does this. We operate on about a 2% operating margin. If we're lucky, that's on a good year. We're not for profits. So that 2% goes back into buying new equipment, buying for the hospital. We put everything back into it, reinvest into the hospital, and there's no way we could provide the services we provide without the support of the community. So we're just very fortunate and very blessed.
And, of course, Baxter Regional Medical Center remains the largest employer of our community, roughly around 1,700. Is that right?
That is correct. About 1,700 people are employed now at Baxter Regional.
So the impact that not only the hospital has with our medical care, but then on the flip side, the economic impact that that Baxter Regional Medical Center has, vital is not even the word to use.
Well, you are right. We do provide this medical services, which is our first and our greatest benefit. But then we also, I think, are kind of the economic engine for the community. According to some research, it shows that we're 1 in 4 jobs in Baxter County are healthcare related, and I think that has a lot to do because of the hospital. That's not solely the hospital, but has a lot to do because of the hospital.
Well, continued good luck and hard work for you and your staff, and we look forward to being a part of it and helping you in any way we can.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
You've been listening to Local Matters on KTLO.